Welcome to Local Talk Wednesday on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events around the counties of Central Iowa. I am one of your hosts today, Susan Franson, together with my co-host, Gina McAndrews. Hello, Gina.
Hello, Susan, and hello to our listeners. I'm sure glad to be back for a couple of our good old road trip.
That's right. We'll start our program with a visit to Farmer Joe Reuter and the Enchanted Valley Tree Farm, where a young couple will be buying their first Iowa Christmas tree.
Then we're going to be out talking to a couple of the directors from three plays that are put on by the community theaters in our area for the Christmas season. They're pretty good shows, as well as we're going to highlight some other entertainment that's coming up this weekend.
This is KHOI Previews the Arts throughout our listening area.
I'm eager to hear about your visit to Joe Reuter, too. I remember when we walked the hills out there for our program last fall in the footsteps of Kate Shelley. So I'm glad to hear about her farm.
I didn't walk much this time. As you'll hear, it was a little muddy. Let's hear what Joe has to say. This time, I focused on the business of the tree farm, which is a different kind of agriculture than we usually cover. You know, we usually have a segment called Tuning into Agriculture.
So this is going to be Tuning into Agriculture?
Yeah, I think so. And the Happy Farmer theme is appropriate for this time of year on a Christmas tree farm. You remember, Gina, the turnoff for the farm is a few miles past the Boone four-way stop intersection and just before the Des Moines River. It's marked by a green sign saying Tree Farm, where you come in from the east, or Enchanted Valley Tree Farm, when you come at it from the west. I'm very aware of the difference in the signs because I live out just on the other side of the Des Moines River, and I think about Joe every time I drive into Boone. I think you have to be pretty determined to find this farm, though. It's a couple of miles down the road, and you can certainly tell you're in a valley when you get there.
Yes, the road's kind of curvy and pretty hilly. I wonder why Joe decided to start a tree farm here.
That's just the question I asked him. What I'd like to do now is to ask you about how you decided to have a Christmas tree farm here. And what's one of the angles here is that we do often do a little 10-minute segment or so called Tuning into Agriculture. And of course, a tree farm is a different kind of farm to have in Iowa. And so how did you get the idea for having a tree farm in this really pretty remote and inaccessible place?
Well, it all started when we were living, actually, in Bellevue, Nebraska. That's just south of Omaha. And I went to buy some black walnut lumber in a large lumber yard. And the man took me into a room, and there were only four boards laying on the floor. And he says, "That's all we have. And I like to do woodworking." That's the reason I was looking for the walnut lumber. And I thought, well, you know, people need to be growing this stuff. So when we had an opportunity to come back here, I wanted to buy like maybe 10 acres of something that you could plant walnut trees on, and didn't really find anything in central Iowa, but this property was available. It was 70 acres, which was a lot larger. And I had no idea it was a historic property. The realtor didn't know it. And anyway, we ended up getting some pretty good terms on it and bought it. We bought it originally for hardwoods, and then we had a 10-acre open space that I thought, well, maybe we could try some Christmas trees on it. So that's how we got into the Christmas tree business.
Well, the Christmas trees are way up on the hill, is that right?
That's right.
And so how do people get them?
Okay, we have to take them up on my gator. They can ride in the back of that, and one can ride in front. Or a few people like to walk up and take a sled with them and get their tree and come back down here to the bottom.
And could you describe the gator? It looks like a sort of an unusual vehicle.
We could walk over and take a closer look at it. It has two drive wheels in back. In front, it's just two normal wheels. It's, it has pretty good traction and doesn't tend to disturb the earth too much.
Well, it looks like you have some chains on the back wheels anyhow.
That's especially for wintertime operation. And it's has a heated cab, which is great for me or for the person who might be in the party that has a young baby, so they can stay warm, because it can get very cold.
Now, how many people can ride in this?
About three adults.
So,
and maybe a couple of children in their laps.
But when you get the tree, then some people must have to walk down, right?
That's right. That's what usually happens. That's right, the younger ones.
And how far is it up to where the trees are?
I think it's about a quarter of a mile.
And mostly uphill, or are the hills beyond that?
That's mostly uphill.
And down here, you have a nice fire and a fireplace, a little outdoor fireplace. Do you have anything up there?
Well, we do have something we can burn wood in. We haven't really been using it yet, but I do have a screen-covered pot that we can put wood in and burn it in. But we really haven't been using it that very much since I've gotten the last couple of years.
Well, this is a kind of a slow day. Is that typical, or do you usually have more people?
Well, I think it's slow this afternoon. It was busy earlier, right after lunch. We had a lot of people, but right now it's pretty slow.
But you have quite a few trees. How many trees do you have out cut that people can just come and buy a tree?
Well, right now I think we have 19 trees left, and we started with 60.
Wow, so quite a few people have gotten their trees already.
That's right.
And do you grow all these trees?
No, not all of them, no. These, which you see here, actually I get it from another grower.
What kind of trees do you have?
Okay, what we have down here at the bottom are Fraser firs and Scotch pine. Up there we have Scotch pine, white pine, and there's also some blue spruce in addition to that. And we're trying to grow Fraser firs up there on the top of the hill.
The trees down here, I guess the tallest ones are about 7 feet, is that correct?
The tallest ones would have been 7 to 8 feet, but we're down to all the 8-footers, 8 and 7.5-footers are gone now.
What about the ones that are up on the hill?
Well, there's some white pines up there that are probably 9-10 feet high.
Well, that would be a challenge to get down in your gator.
Well, we have a trailer we can put behind it, too.
Well, it's a beautiful place, and I presume that you have another business when it's not Christmas.
Well, we have a grain farm that we rent out. We're actively involved in that, where we don't cash rent it. We rent it on shares, so I work real close with the renter. We're doing some conservation practices, such as cover crops, buffer strips, and we're looking at doing what's called a bioreactor to help take the nitrates out of the water, because there is a big nitrate problem in this state.
According to Joe, the road is laid out on a roadbed of the old Chicago Northwestern Railroad. The Christmas tree buyer we interviewed was Amber Olick.
And we'd like to hear a little from her, too.
You know, this is probably my favorite way to learn about my community, is to come out, being out in the wilderness. We moved from Illinois and had about 8 acres of land, and my husband has done some vegetable production, so we liked that it was kind of off the beaten path. Fun for us, and we enjoy doing that. Something that we can do together, too, because we both work full-time, so.
And have you found a tree yet?
I think we're going to probably, we like Fraser firs, the smaller needles usually. And it's been a tradition in my family and his too. Like when I was growing up, that was something we always cut down with our parents. So it's something we enjoy to do for the holidays together, because we don't have children yet. So, but we'll probably carry it on if that happens.
Well, do you have any family ornaments, or how do you plan to decorate your tree?
We do. I try to do a theme each year, but I've got some ornaments that I've had since I was a child. And then my mother actually buys an ornament every year for our dogs, because they're our babies. And so a dog that I had several years ago that I had to put down that was my baby, I have his picture still on there. And so each year we do that. And then we also have a few sentimental ornaments, like from when we were married and things like that. So we kind of pull those out and get excited and do those every year. We actually live in Boone. We both work for the university, for Iowa State, and then we decided to live in Boone. We like a rural atmosphere, and we like being kind of in the wilderness a little bit more. So we decided to move to Boone.
I loved Amber's attitude. It's exactly for people like her who are curious about this area, don't know much about it yet, that we create our programs. And actually, I guess as I've said before, I've lived here for 50 years, and I didn't know about our area until I started going out and looking. She'd never heard of Kate Shelley, but it's all waiting for her to discover. And speaking of Kate Shelley, we couldn't leave this farm without asking Joe if there was anything new about the Kate Shelley family, and I was really surprised at what I learned. Let him tell you.
Are there any Kate Shelley remnants on this property?
Well, we're finding out that originally the Shelleys may have lived where the Christmas trees grow, at the top of the hill there, originally. But they moved down towards Honey Creek later on. There's a Misty McNally. She's an author in Kansas City. She's currently writing a book about this. And there's some evidence that they may have lived up there where the Christmas trees are, because there was also an Indian village there.
Really?
Yes.
Have you found Indian artifacts up there?
Not yet.
How do you know there was an Indian village?
I haven't personally found artifacts, but there have been other artifacts that some archaeologists have found in the area. And there's also burial sites there, too. But anyway, Steve McNally has asked me to see if I can find any cabin artifacts. But it would have been logical, because going up on the hill, they would have had a access into Boone from that way. It would have been easy to get there. Probably their only problem would be water. They would have had to find a spring or something to get their drinking water from. But the Indians obviously had done something, so...
Well, thank you very much. Every time I come out here, I learn more.
Yeah, there's a lot to learn.
Thank you. We've been talking to Joe Reuter, and thanks so much for letting us come to your Christmas tree, to the Enchanted Valley
Tree Farm.
Christy McNally that Joe referred to is the woman who first got us started exploring Kate Shelley a couple years ago.
She's still writing her book on Kate Shelley, but you know, she has published a book that was mentioned just last week. It's the book they read on the Santa Express over on the Boone and Scenic Valley Railroad.
For listeners like Amber, who haven't heard of Kate Shelley, we ought to play the Ballad of Kate Shelley. It's a nice dramatic story and reasonable transition to the rest of our program that will deal with the dramatic productions in the community theaters coming up.
July 6th, 1881, a fierce storm was raging. The rain just wouldn't stop coming down. The river and creeks were flooding in the Des Moines River Valley near the railroad station by Mondona Town. Around 11 in the evening, a pusher train went out to search for men looking for washouts along the track. Past the Shelley family home, a mighty crash, the Shelleys heard the Honey Creek Bridge had just collapsed. 15-year-old Kate Shelley ran outside into the storm, saw two men trapped down in that river grave. She couldn't rescue them herself, but knew that midnight train would be sooner coming down the tracks this way. 100 years from now, folks will still speak her name. Kate Shelley will always be that girl who saved the train. Kate had to hurry to warn Mondona Station, and that old trestle bridge was the only way. darkness and the storm. She crawled on her hands and knees across that tiny catwalk in the pouring rain. Halfway across the river, a tree crashed into the trestle. Kate was sure that shaky bridge would fall apart. Just at the last moment, that tree slipped through the pier's knees, the fear of death beating in her heart. When Kate reached the other side, she ran to Mongona Station, warning them that the bridge had just washed out. The agent stopped the train just before it passed through, otherwise that train would have been hellbound. 100 years from now, folks will still speak her name. Kate Shelley will always be that girl who saved the train. Kate led a rescue train and saved the two men in the river. Lord, only two men lost their lives. More would have died if not for this young girl's courage. What bravery Kate Shelley showed that night. What bravery Kate Shelley showed that night. 100 years from now, folks will still speak her name. Kate Shelley will always be that girl who saved the train. Kate Shelley will always be that girl who saved the train.
This is KHOI Community Radio with your hosts Susan Franzen and Gina McAndrews, taking you on a tour of the Enchanted Valley Tree Farm on the former Kate Shelley Farm west of Boone. Thanks to Joe Reuter for the tour and for Amber Ulick for telling us why she had come there with her husband Nick to pick out a tree from the tree farm and explore rural Boone County.
Now we're going to start a theater tour with our directors of three plays that opened last weekend in community theaters in our area. All will be playing again this next coming weekend, so this is a preview. And we made this a road trip by going to the Regifters in the Ankeny Community Theater Sunday afternoon.
That was a fun trip, discovering a new to us theater and a very enjoyable Christmas play. All three of the productions we're reviewing are playing for the Christmas season, but only two of them, the Regifters at the Ankeny Community Theater and Julie B. and Jingle Bells, Batman Smells, at the Webster City Community Theater. Only those two have Christmas themes. The Boone Community Theater is presenting Neil Simon's Barefoot in the Park, and we are fortunate to have with us the producer, Nick Julesgaard. Welcome, Nick. We're very glad to have you with us by phone today in our studio. Were you part of choosing Barefoot in the Park, or did you come in later?
Yeah. So my wife is the director, and naturally we talked a little bit about it. We decided on Barefoot in the Park. It's a winter play, and we decided in July, which, you know, setting a play in a time of year is interesting. When it's really hot out, you don't want to set a winter play, but right now when it's cold out, it's nice to have a cold play. It's not necessarily a winter or a Christmas theme, but it is a love story, so we wanted to have something upbeat and fun and a smaller cast. We had a couple people who we definitely wanted to audition, but we wanted to get some people in and we wanted to try out some new people. So we wanted a cast that we knew we could manage. So.
Just how large is the cast?
There are four principal characters and two side characters.
And who are the principal characters?
So the two main characters are Corey and Paul Prater, and they're a newlywed couple. And Corey she's very young and maybe a little impetuous, but very happy and carefree, and she just wants to start her life with her new husband. And Paul is a very stern, he just graduated from law school. They got married right after he graduated. He passed the bar, and he's just starting with his first case. And so he's very excited to get his career started and make the money that's required to live in their new apartment, which they just bought. And admittedly, the apartment is kind of a fixer-upper. So Corey is trying to make this new life for them, and Paul is trying to provide for them. And the other two characters are her mother, who is an empty nester now and just can't help but stop by and wants to know everything about her daughter's life. And their crazy upstairs neighbor is a guy named Victor Velasco, who is a very worldly man, older, has seen the world, is part of dinner clubs, has dined with kings, and or so he says. And he lives upstairs. At one point, he has to get up to his apartment through their window because he's locked himself out. So,
Those are the two minor characters. But now, what are the really minor characters?
The really minor characters. There's a delivery man that comes in, and you get to see kind of the world of Corey and Paul through his eyes. They live up in the fifth floor, and so he has to climb all the way up to the top with his heavy equipment to fix her phone, and then there's another delivery man.
Well, the other question that I had was when I heard Barefoot in the Park, I thought about running through the grass. In fact, I think your poster has a picture of running through the grass, but that doesn't sound like a winter play.
Oh, that's the whole point, is that Corey is very carefree, and she just wants to run barefoot through the park. Even though it's 35 degrees out, she'd like to be outside running barefoot in the park. And Paul, who is sensible, doesn't want to do that. So
that's where it comes as a winter play, and I can see the sweet interactions you're going to have over that. Sounds like a really fun play.
Oh, now, it's just so funny.
I'm also curious about something else about their apartment. When was this written? Do you know?
Yeah, I do know. It was written in the late 60s. It's set in 1963.
Okay, when you could still buy a fixer-upper in New York.
That's right. The funny line is that they're renting their apartment for $125 a month.
And you left that in the play.
That's exorbitant, yes.
Right. Well, I happened to, a couple years ago, look at some real estate ads in New York, and a one-bedroom apartment was selling for over $1 million. So I don't know what the rents were, but a little more than $125.
I would say so. So
are there any surprising things that have happened during the rehearsals?
Actually, no surprising things. It's just been a very, very fun, pleasant, stress-free production schedule. We've had nothing but good luck. All our actors are really invested, and they're doing great. I mean, it's one of the best plays I've seen. A little back history for myself and my wife. We both graduated from Iowa State with theater degrees in 2010. And then I decided to go back to school for engineering, and we've just been around AIMS since then. Haven't really done a lot of theater, and we decided last year to get back involved. And we saw audition notices for a play over at Boone, and so we said, why not? Let's go audition. And we happened to get in, and we've been involved ever since. And we're really excited. This is our favorite production, obviously, because we have some control over it, but it's our favorite production we've done. It's a lot of fun. I spent a lot of time helping build the set and producing and trying to get the word out. And my wife has done a fantastic job, just great at directing the play. And our actors are amazing. They're hilarious. They get better every single night. We had three shows this last weekend, and they just went great. And we have two shows next weekend. I wish we could do more just because I'm so excited about this play.
Well, I think it's time to tell people when those two shows are. I noticed your starting time is 7 p.m. Is that correct?
That's correct.
That's a little earlier than most plays start around here, so people really should be aware when they're making their plans.
That's correct. You should be aware. They start at 7, so we'll have curtain at 7 p.m. Our doors open at 6:30. The show time is about 2 hours and 5 minutes.
there are tickets on sale, and they can get those at the box office and online. Is that right? How you?
That's right. Yeah, if you go to boonecommunitytheater.org, you can find all the ticket information.
And incidentally, on our website, when we put up this show, which we'll do later today, we'll also have links to your website.
Great.
So people can click and get it there. Now, one of the other things that I noticed in the Boone News Republican article about the play was that you have actors from Ogden as well as from Boone and Ames. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. That's right. Obviously, we want to cast out of Boone. It's Boone Community Theater. It's the easiest for people to get there. But we love involving other people, and we are a great example of that. Kelly and I live in Ames, but we go over to Boone to be part of this community. We really love the community that they've created there, and we're trying to help create an even better one. We are there, active, engaged. We have people from Ogden who have been there for a few years, and everybody who's involved wants to be there. And that's the best part about a community like this, is that people are excited and they're happy, and there's no chore to this. It's just fun.
And what about your audience? Do you have a supportive audience?
We do. We pull out of a lot of different places all over the area. The last play, we had an actor from Jefferson and pulled in a pretty decent-sized crew from Jefferson to come see her. And then, obviously, we have some people coming from Ames. We have some of our friends who are coming from Chicago to see the play. So,
well, that's really out of town.
Yeah. Well, I think that people are just excited. When I tell them about the play, I think they get excited to come see it. So
that's the way it's supposed to work, and I hope our listeners are learning one of the many options that they're going to have this weekend, but it sounds like the Boone Community Theater is putting on a really good production. Thank you so much, Nick, for being with us. Nick Julesgaard's comments about the wonderful community being created by the Boone Community Theater, together with Amber Olick's remarks about how much she and her husband, Nick, enjoy living in Boone because of the rural atmosphere, show just why KHOI feels it is important to get the word out about the wonderful towns in our listening area. So this is the time to thank all of you who contributed to our recent membership drive and fund drive. We are volunteer-based, and being a non-commercial educational station, we don't have advertising income. So we really need our listeners. We need our listeners to make us a better station. We need our listeners to hear us and tell their friends. And we need our listeners' financial support. So thanks to all of you who helped with our recent fund drive. This is KHOI Community Radio, featuring the December productions at community theaters in our area. We just heard from Nick Julesgaard, producer of Barefoot in the Park, which will be playing at the Boone Community Theater this weekend. The productions are at 7 p.m. on Friday and Saturday, the 11th and 12th. They're 7 p.m. on the 11th and 12th. And now we have a director. This is the director for the production at the Webster City Community Theater, Julie B. in Jingle Bells, Batman Smells. And Stephanie Hale, the director of Julie B. in Jingle Bells, Batman Smells at the Webster City Community Theater, is just joining us to tell us how this play that premiered last weekend and will be playing again on Friday and Saturday at 7:30 and Sunday at 2 p.m. Is being received. Well, how was your first weekend, Stephanie?
The first weekend was a pretty good turnout. We had a lot of competition, though, with the Iowa game on Friday, and there were also some other performances in town. But Sunday, the turnout was wonderful. And we're hoping that with a lot of the events now kind of being done with, that we'll have a much better turnout this weekend.
Well, it certainly looked from the title like it would be a family-friendly movie.
Absolutely.
I mean, not a movie, sorry, a family-friendly play.
Absolutely. I think that children and adults would get a lot out of it. The book is written for children, but the events that happen in Junie B's life are universal for children, I think.
For those who aren't familiar with Barbara Parks, is it one book or is this a series?
This is a series of books. She started the series in 1992, and there are about 27 books in all that chronicle Junie B's life events in kindergarten and first grade. Life events like riding the school bus for the first time and being told that something might happen on the bus. You know, those scary things that to adults are minor, but to children, it's a big deal. So that's what the series is about. Junie B has a mother and a father and a little brother, Ollie, and she is just a bright and friendly, inquisitive little girl and has friends to share her little intrigues with.
Well, judging from the pictures that I saw on your website, Julie B. is not a grade school girl. Now, what? How was the casting on this? Has Julie B. grown up? Or
no, not at all. We thought it would be funnier if we cast adults to play first graders. That in itself has been, adds a little kind of a depth to it. The fact that Junie B, the fact that you're trying to get adults to behave like first graders is in itself a little bit of a challenge, particularly young adults who are trying to be as adult as they can, and now I'm asking them to go back and pretend that they're first graders again. So that was a casting decision.
Well, and in the rehearsals and production, how did that work out? Did you have fun with that?
Oh, absolutely. We have had just a blast putting this together and kind of drawing out the first grader in all of these characters.
The first graders in the teenagers, is that right?
Yeah.
And of course, this comes from the Homer Simpson song. How is that used in the play?
Well, the play is actually about, it's Christmas time, and Junie B and her class are going to do a holiday sing-along. And Junie B is dreading the holiday sing-along, and the play is about why.
When I was looking for clips of Jingle Bells, Batman Smells by Bart Simpson online and having trouble downloading them, I found Bart singing in the Christmas in his school. And his parents are oohing and aahing over him. I presume most people are very familiar with this, but since we couldn't play it, I will repeat the what happened. His mother turns to his father and says, "Laurel sounds like an angel," and then he bursts out with "Jingle bells, Batman smells, Robin laid an egg," and of course that's the punchline of the song. Is that sort of what happens in Julie B?
Sort of. But I don't want to ruin the surprise that is part of the surprise. Well, not a surprise now, but there's a little bit more to it than just that. But I don't want to spoil it for anybody who wants to come and see it. You should see the play and find out what happens.
Well, that's a great invitation and a great incitement to see the play, because as I said, I don't think by telling about what Bart Simpson did that we have told anything that a lot of people don't know. But what Julie B does is going to be really fun.
Yes, it is really fun, and there's a little life lesson in it also.
Yes, that's the nice thing about Christmas plays from The Christmas Carol on, they always have nice little surprises.
Yes.
and heartwarming surprises. Well, I'm so glad that you were with us to tell us about Julie B. in Jingle Bells, Batman Smells. And I know that the Webster City Community Theater is a great place to have this production, and I wish you well this coming weekend. Do you want to give the times and places and the details?
Certainly. The Webster City Community Theater is located at 1001 Wilson Avenue in Webster City. The show times are 7:30 p.m. Friday and Saturday, and at 2 p.m. on Sunday.
Thank you, and good luck.
Well, thank you for having me.
Thank you, Stephanie. That was Stephanie Hill, director of Julie B. in Jingle Bells, Batman Smells at the Webster City Community Theater. I think we'd better move on to our third guest and tell about our experience at the Ankeny Community Theater. This is the first time we've included a full preview of a play from Ankeny.
That's because we just learned that Ankeny is fully in our listening area. We're delighted to include reviews from the Ankeny Community Theater because it has its own special flavor, which we experienced last Sunday afternoon when we attended Regifters, a play by Robert Lynn. It was fun to see a play that was new to the area. Regifters won the New America Comedy Festival, which is a distinction. During intermission, I had a chance to interview the director, Michael Prosch.
This is great. This is one of the best audiences that we've had. It was only our third show. They're laughing at everything, and they're picking up on everything, and that's exactly what you want, especially if you're on stage. And the more the people laugh, the better you are on stage, and the more they laugh, and it just has a snowball effect. We practice a lot for the laughter, to try to put in our pauses so they don't miss anything. Because this thing about this show, rehearsals were so difficult. We were having to pause for our own laughter. It was really hard to actually get through a scene at rehearsals. So we knew where the laughs were because we were laughing at them ourselves. And we still are. We're still in the green room, still laughing at what's going on stage.
How did you find this play?
Actually, the theater itself found it. They have a play selection committee, and they found the play, and they put it out there to our directors. And as soon as I read that script, I saw the entire show. And this is incredibly funny. And I said, I have to direct this show. All the little innuendos and everything you see playing out, the action, I saw that, and I said, I had to direct it to put it out there.
And have you directed other shows?
I have. This is my fourth one.
For Ankeny Community Theater or others?
Just Ankeny Community Theater. I've performed in other theaters, but this is the one I most enjoy directing. I wouldn't want to direct anywhere else.
This is quite an unusual theater because it's relatively small.
We prefer the word intimate.
Well, it is intimate, but that definitely has a real advantage, I think, for productions.
Yeah, the play going on right in front, it's like you're performing in your living room. And people seem to enjoy it. In fact, we have somebody here. This is her third time seeing the show. And again, this is our third performance. She's come every night to see the show.
Well, one of the things that I found interesting is the way you sell tickets. I guess people can walk in and buy them, but we order them online. But we received only a assurance that we had a reservation. Mm-hmm. And when we came, we were escorted to our seats. The fact that you have a handwritten seating chart to take people to their seats, very personalized.
That's part of the intimacy I just mentioned. Well, you put in your reservation. As soon as you walk in, we confirm that. We take care of the billing stuff, and somebody shows you right to your seat and with a program, so you don't have to worry about getting one. We make sure you get one. Everything, concessions, or you can even get a concession before you have a seat, a soda or a coffee or whatnot. Look around. It's just a nice little party. I do this at every intermission. I come out to see the audience and talk to a few people. And actually, during the show, I'm sneaking in the back to watch the audience so I can get a feel of what works, what doesn't work. I plan on directing again. And we can also make subtle little changes as the show progresses based on the audience's reaction.
How long have you had this theater?
Ankeny Community Theater, I think it's 33, 34 years now.
Have you always been in this space?
No, I think we've been in this space for maybe 20 years. 20 years sounds right, maybe a little bit more. But I know they were at the Elks Lodge when it was on the other end of this building. The Ankeny United Methodists first started this in the basement of their church, and it just grew big. Eventually, we might have to get a new theater to fit more people in.
And then it wouldn't be so intimate.
We'd find a way. We'll make it intimate. That's the most important thing, and we would have moved a long time ago unless if it wasn't for that fear of losing that intimacy.
Again, that was the director of ReGifters. He is very talented and excited about his work, and he is definitely right. It was a wonderful, intimate theater, and the show was just wonderful. It was hilarious. You could really imagine people in your own life that were similar to those that were in the play, and it was just a wonderful location, and people, you got to meet all kinds of people in the theater as well.
Yeah, that was it was an interesting play because the dialogue was so they had caught phrases that you hear, not necessarily from such disagreeable people, but phrases that you have been irritated by. But here you had these. I won't describe any more about the play right now because we have some audience reactions. And this was taken at intermission before the serious feel-good ending took place.
Well, it's been wonderful. Very enjoyable and worth a good laugh. Yeah, if you need a good laugh, you need to come.
Yeah, so do you? What's your review of the play?
Well, so far we're really enjoying it. We had as much fun anticipating it as we did coming to see it. Because all week we've all said that we just need something light and airy and fun. And this fills the bill. We've really enjoyed it.
I loved the play and all the actors were great. Beautiful.
That was the audience reaction. It certainly was funny, but it was more than that. But you really couldn't have told what was going to happen that would be more than just funny from the first act of the play. The description on the website captures the story pretty well. A couple discovers a not-so-great Christmas present that they regifted is worth a fortune. In a mad pursuit to retrieve the gift, they find that they are not the only ones who rewrapped it and passed it on to others. While trying to retrieve the gift, everyone learns about friendship, real wealth, and the value of a gift truly given. And that's hard to believe.
And just a reminder, this play will be produced again this weekend at the Ankeny Community Theater. It will be performed at 7:30 on Friday and Saturday night, and again at 2 p.m. on Sunday. And it lasts about 2 hours. There's a nice intermission that offers coffee and some treats. Just a real nice production, and I really think you should go.
Well, there's another point that we really need to make here. Unlike the other two plays, which are only play again this coming weekend, ReGifters will be the next weekend and the following weekend. It'll play the 11th through the 13th and the 18th through the 20th, and three productions each weekend. This is particularly helpful because the theater is only 80 seats, so it sells out pretty fast. So if you're thinking of coming, you should take advantage of the online reservations. Before we leave you today, we should mention Nevada. Nevada doesn't have a community theater, although I understand that there are some people there who want to get one started. But it does have the Talent Factory, and the Talent Factory regulars will be holding their Christmas show on Friday, December 11th at 8 p.m., Classic cartoons start at 7 p.m., so clearly this is a family-friendly show.
The Nevada Public Library will be holding a magical night at the North Pole on Tuesday, December 15th, from 6:30 to 7:30. So be sure to wear your favorite jammies and bring an adult along. They're even going to serve a little milk and cookies.
So if you didn't get to wear your jammies to the Santa Express, you can go to the North Pole anyway at Nevada.
right?
That's right.
And I think now we're going to be going into our outro. You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. We've been your hosts, Susan Franzen and Gina McAndrews. We started out the show with a visit to the Enchanted Valley Tree Farm, talking with Joe Reuter and Amber Ulick. Then we spoke with Nick Julesgaard, producer of Barefoot in the Park at the Boone Community Theater, Stephanie Hill, director of Junie B. in Jingle Bells, Batman Smells at the Webster City Community Theater, and Michael Prosch, director of The Regifters at the Ankeny Community Theater.
Local Talk will be rebroadcast at noon and 7 p.m. today. You can listen to today's Local Talk show and any of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. There you will also find information about our guests, along with relevant links to today's stories. And if you like us on Facebook, you can get updates on all of our show postings in your news feed.
Local Talk was engineered by Richard Morrison. Music for Tuning into Agriculture is The Happy Farmer by Robert Schumann, performed by John Zaradin Quartet from the CD Archives and Interludes. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD The Ballad of Kate Shelley. And today we heard the lead track on the CD, on that same CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley.
Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a show. If you would like to join our team as a reporter, please contact us at 515-292-2878. Again, that's 292-2878. Or feel free to contact us through our website at khoifm.org.
If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI possible. Thanks for listening, and
see you again on the radio.
Bobtail ring, making spirits bright. What fun it is to ride and sing a sleighing song tonight.
Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh. Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh.
Two ago, I thought I'd take a ride, and soon Miss Fanny Bright was seated by my side. The horse was lean and lank, misfortune was his lot. He got into a drifted bank, and we did get upsot.
Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh. Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh.
while you're young. Take the girls tonight and sing this playing song. Just get a bobtail pig, 240 for his speed. Then hitch him to an open sleigh and crack, you'll take the lead.
Jingle bell, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh. Jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh. Jingle bell, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh.